brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Welcome back to the podcast, Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, good, good. You know, I've been listening to your episodes on Paint All the Minis from like 2017 because I can't get enough of you, presumably. So, hi, the good old days.
What you been listening to, John?
I just started right at the start because, like, I think I've told you before, like, I did a massive binge of your show like back in 2018 or 19. Went on holiday to Mexico, lay by the pool for 2 weeks, and just listened to you, which seems absolutely mental on hindsight.
Paid for that as well, mate.
Yeah, like traveled 9 hours on a plane, or like it might have been more actually. It might have been like 13, just to hear your English accent just in my ear.
To listen to me. What did you think of the first one, man? It's pretty painful when I listen to that one. What do you think?
I don't think I went to the very first because I remember you saying that you recorded it like in a cafe or something on a phone, and so
it was all right. Yeah, it was all right, but yeah, it's pretty painful. Like,
should I still do it? I remember.
Yeah, man. I remember there was the school that I was working at the time. One of the parents was a radio presenter, so I remember I recorded it. I sent it to them, and I was like, "Ah, what do you think of this?" And they were very polite, but it was very clear that they were like, "Oh, okay, yeah, you need to kind of loosen up a little bit." But that was cool.
For improvement.
I liked it. It was good. Yeah, definitely. Always. Yeah, man. So storage stuff then. So you wanted to talk about storage. So why did you want to talk about storage?
Yeah, I just like upped my storage game recently, or storage and transportation, if we kind of like put this under one blanket. Well, starting with the storage itself, like, are you a display cabinet man, or are you a pack it away in boxes man?
Yeah, I live somewhere that's quite hot and not quite sunny, so I don't want to put stuff on display really, because if it's sun is shining through the windows a lot, it'll make it fade. And also just coming out the back of having small kids, you know, so glass is like a kind of ugh. And then also stuff within a glass cabinet is like double ugh. So yeah, I'm a big storage guy. So what I did is, in IKEA they have there's like these quite sturdy like card boxes, like white card boxes, probably about 60 centimeters long, about 40 to 45 centimeters wide, and then probably about the same, probably 45 centimeters deep. So obviously they're cheap, they're pretty durable. But what I did is I contacted a company that makes like custom foam for secure cases for like engineering instruments and cameras and stuff like that, camera equipment. So if you reach out to those companies that do the foam, they can do like custom cuts. So you basically, if I have like expensive camera equipment, I can phone them up and say, yeah, I've got like a Sony whatever camera or a Nikon whatever camera, and then they'll cut foam to certain specifications. So I kind of just contacted them, I emailed them, and I got a bunch of foam trays with the same dimensions as the IKEA box. I'll grab one out there in my room here. So yeah, these boxes from IKEA, and then within them I can fit 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 deep. I'll send some pictures, maybe you can put them on your blog or whatever. So I kind of, the dimensions of the IKEA box, but then they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So they've got 5 times 7 gaps on this foam tray, and all of my stuff fits quite nicely in there. And then all that stuff is stored on top of a wardrobe. So I've got 5 of those boxes with all my stuff in. So it works out really, really nice because they're out the way. They've got, it's not custom foam for each individual model. It's like a kind of rough rectangle, probably about 5 centimeters long by about 2.5 wide. So for my Song of Ice and Fire guys, I can fit like 3 individual models within one slot. So I can fit 1 unit of 12 across one row, so I can fit 5 units in one thing. So it works out really nice, and it took me a long time to get to that. I've been through loads of different iterations. Like, I got first I got like a GW case, just because they're so prevalent and you see them so much. But I thought it was rubbish. So they have these foam squares, and then have you seen it? It's got the wavy line foam. Have you seen that online?
Yeah.
Anywhere? Yeah. But yeah, just didn't really like that at all. It just didn't really feel like it was protecting the models, and it was okay, but wasn't great. Then I saw a video on magnetization. So I bought some clear plastic kind of tray things, like tubs, and I put like some magnetized roll at the bottom, like self-adhesive magnetized roll stuff. Don't know what's made out of, like plasticky stuff. And then I put magnets on the bases of all my minis, and that worked pretty well for storage. But then I was playing like Star Wars Legion a lot of that time, and where like unit placement is quite important. And the guys were either sticking together all the time or like repelling each other. So I'd like trying to hide them behind a little bit of terrain or whatever, and they'd all just be like springing away from each other and that. So that kind of sucked. So that's how I found, after that like third or fourth try, that's how I found the IKEA boxes and the custom foam. And the custom foam was super cheap, actually. Like, I'll talk about Feldhair in a little bit because that's my transport stuff. But I just found like Feldhair and there's another few companies. And they're good and stuff, but it's crazy expensive. So speaking to the people direct for this foam, it cost about £2 per tray. And on Feldhair or whatever, it was like €15 each. So yeah, I think if you find the right people and you find the right place, I think it's you can get a decent one. But yeah, that's me. Mm-hmm. How about you?
So storage wise, I do have a glass cabinet. It's not grandiose or anything, but it does the job. So I get my miniatures in there once they're painted, and big old heavy bit of glass. The wee one, Touchwood, is well enough behaved not to go raking in the miniatures anyway, but I doubt she'd get into that at the moment because it's a bit heavy. But like I say, I'll touch wood on that. And on the transportation front, for the last couple of years, I've been using just simple egg boxes filled with bubble wrap.
And, yeah, good shot, yeah.
You can get like one egg compartment usually fits one miniature. So like, you know, a box of six eggs, six miniatures and so on. So I've got a few egg boxes now, and I did a wee YouTube video about this actually, but the wife signed up to like a wine. YouTube, I know. The wife signed up to like a wine subscription thing, so you get a couple of bottles sent to you every month. Because we're now apparently middle class. So the cardboard, like it's like a little suitcase container made of cardboard, and instead of throwing it out, I thought, let's put the egg boxes in there, and they fitted perfectly. So I could get like, you know, a couple of decent sized warbands just packed into that. And when I leave the house, people think I'm just going to drink wine, but I'm actually going to play miniatures games. So everyone's winning.
There you go. They think you're cool, some sort of, you know, some sort of suave guy heading out to the wine bar. But no, you've got egg boxes full of minis.
Exactly.
That's good, man. So you decided to make your own stuff. Is that a very deliberate choice? You're trying to be economical, or you're trying to protect the world, or are you just too tight to get your hand in your pocket, or what?
God, I wish it was that noble. It was literally just that looks like it will do the job, and it did.
Right.
So, yeah, I'd love to say there was loads of thought behind it, that there wasn't. So,
have you ever seen anyone with like a really decent like travel solution, and you've gone, wow, that's like the Rolls Royce of mini carrying?
Yeah, I've seen pictures online and stuff, actually, you know, old toolboxes and that, and the guy opens the lid and it's like, you know, the sort of telescopic shelves pop up and everything. So you do see some like very, very sophisticated kind of transportation solutions, but mine isn't one of them. It's just very much functional. I would hate to think what would happen in the rain, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Well, yeah. Yeah, man, that's good. I like that. That's awesome. So everything is in a display case at your house.
Yeah, it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 shelves of about almost a meter in length each. It's pretty packed now. I mean, that's me being back in the hobby for about 5 years. So you know, I've collected and painted up a fair amount of stuff in that time, but it is getting to the stage where I'm struggling for room in there, and I'm not sure, you know, what do you do at that stage? Do you put some of them away in a drawer? Is it an incentive to get rid of some stuff? I've not really made a decision on that front yet. So
it's really, it's a really important decision. Like I've got the top of the wardrobe, and that's all the space I want to give myself. Does that make sense? So it's like, if I've got probably space for one more box, but if I have to do another box after that, I'm going to probably have to get rid of stuff, because I don't want to have too much stuff. So I've got two boxes for all my Song of Ice and Fire stuff. I've got one box for all my Star Wars Legion stuff, and I've got one box for all my like generic World War II stuff. So like all my bolt action gear and that. But yeah, it's interesting. I think it's really important not to over collect, but that's a different topic. So like traveling around, I only travel for skirmish games. I don't travel for full tabletop games. So I play tabletop games here, like at my work. So I don't need to transport stuff around the city. So what I do usually is I'll just take the top off one of the IKEA boxes, and I'll put all the minis on that, on the top of that. And then I'll just take I'll take that down to where I'm playing, and then I'll bring it up later. But if I'm playing mini games around the city, I found this awesome like Feldherr box. So Feldherr is like one of the custom foam companies. And it's like, it's probably the size of like a small cool bag. You know, like a cool bag that people have for like picnic stuff. So it's probably the size of a small cool bag, and it's got like a kind of, I'd call it a boob separator strap, you know, like when ladies wear a handbag over one shoulder, and then the strap separate the boob separator. Yep, it's got one of those. So you kind of, it's like a small cool bag size, and you just kind of wrap it over one shoulder. And it's really cool. You probably fit about 24. to 36 miniatures in there with cards and dice and a few different bits, and then you can just carry your rule books. So that's pretty nice. It's pretty robust. I think it was a bag that was made, and it's not made for, but I got it when I got my Walking Dead stuff. So the Walking Dead All Out War, and it fit all of the base game in there, all the cards and everything like that. And then I just kind of got some different generic mini holding foam things that fitted in that, and that works pretty well because it's not huge, it's not big. So yeah, you got on the train or got on the bus or whatever, and it's pretty good, like saying a small cooler bag size, which is awesome.
Yeah, sounds like you're sorted. You just need some pals now.
Yeah, I just walk around the city with it on, just kind of looking a bit sad. There's different rule books each week, just kind of showing people the rule book, kind of, you know, hoping someone gets excited or interested about the title. I play Frostgrave. Do you want to play? Do you want to play Frostgrave? We've got all the stuff. No, I haven't got my mini. Don't worry, I've got enough for two warbands.
Is that wine in your suitcase?
There's five Starbucks within 700 meters that we can walk to. Any excuse that they might have, I can just shoot down. No, so that's pretty good. Talking about Starbucks, Starbucks is a decent place to play. It is a decent place. If you're looking for like neutral ground to meet somebody for the first time, that's my general first meeting place when I'm introducing myself to potential new gaming chums. Yeah. I know you don't play any games, you just talk about them. But if you are looking to play a game at some point in the future, Starbucks is a good neutral ground because the tables are an okay size. There's a lot of them. It's pretty well lit. Mm-hmm. The drinks are expensive, but they're all right. Yeah, so Starbucks is a good meeting point.
What would you like to hear first? My lumberjack game, Tree Fellers Get Wood, or my democracy game, May or May Not? That's mayor as in
mayor. Mate. Well, they're both amazing. I don't even need to hear anymore. I'm buying both of those off the shelf for sure, just because of the name. I like lumberjacks more than politicians, so let's hear the politics one.
All right. So may or may not, this idea, I was just basically, my starting point here wasn't the fact that the US just went through a massive election. It was more the fact that I was looking at my own miniatures and terrain, and I've got like a couple of little fantasy houses, like medieval fantasy houses, and some villagers that aren't combat miniatures. They're just like doing their, you know, rustic villager thing. So I thought I could get a wee game on the go here where there's a small village full of NPCs who are the villagers or the voters, and then you and I take our miniatures, and these are candidates to become the next mayor of the village. So the villagers themselves are there's a random movement mechanic, so they're just going about their business, and our little miniatures are taking turns to go about and basically canvas to approach these NPCs and try and win them over to get support, basically. So how it kind of works is, like, there are certain voter issues, like there are things that are top of mind for certain people. They vary from villager to villager. So one villager, top of mind for him or her might be, the halflings are stealing our jobs. Something needs to be done about that. The other person, you know, it might be the taxes are too high. Maybe a farmer feels that more needs to be invested in growing food. You know, unemployment benefits maybe for somebody, or we need better defences against an impending orc invasion. So there's all these issues, these social issues that are, they're top of mind for different folks. And the villagers, they have a score on each issue to show how much that they care about it. And that corresponds to a D6 roll when you're attempting to win them over. So if a villager cares 4 about the taxes being too high, I would need to roll a 4 or up to convince them that I'm going to get that sorted. And I've got a budget of...
Would that mean that they care about it less if it's higher or more?
Yeah, so like if a villager is down as caring 6 about something, then they really care about it, but it's also going to be very hard for you to convince them. But you have a budget of 10. You know, this could be the budget of the, you know, your election budget or your budget when you get elected. So you could add money from that or value from that. So if you needed to roll a 6 to convince someone, you could take that 6 from your budget, but you'd only have 4 left, or you could add that as a modifier. So, you know, maybe I'm going to take 3 from my budget and I'll just need to roll a 3 here. So that's you kind of, you're spending resources to win these villagers over. And once you've won a villager over, the danger is that your opponent could improve on that score and win them over, you know, after you've already spoke to them. So it'd be very easy to, let's say, you know, you could almost always win somebody over by just saying, I'm a local person, you know, my family live here. You know, the baseline politician thing, like, I care about the area.
I'm a family man.
Yeah, yeah, like, and you might need to roll a 2 and they think, okay, that sounds fine. But then your opponent could win them over on an issue that they care much more about after that.
Nice. So, talk to me about the individual political characters, though. Like, do the political characters have different stats and traits and things, or are they just generic suit?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's something I've been thinking about, that, you know, if I was working more on this, I might want more of a diversity between the candidates. For example, you know, one of them might be ex-military and he's very much trusted to sort out, you know, I'll defend the town, you'll be very safe against invasion, but consequently some maybe personal freedoms are going to be taken away to accommodate for that. No, I was just going to say, whereas the other candidate would maybe be seen as a bit more liberal, you know, maybe they could improve the quality of life, but then the danger is that they could be taken advantage of as well. So you could
Orcs
bring in
are just
those
friends that we haven't met yet.
Yeah, yeah.
What about, like, do they have, like, a backup party? You know, is there potential to have, like, trophy wife or, like, advisors or, like... What was Peter Mandelson called? Like a spin doctor or something like that? Is it just a political figure, or have they got like a little team behind them too?
No, it's just the two of them at the moment. And I think one of the big flaws that I see in the game is that there's the danger that you and I would just be playing our own little solo game going about. And, you know, there's obviously the ability to overturn, like, say, you know, we're putting tokens next to villagers that we've convinced. So I've got some red tokens next to villagers I've won over, you've got some blue tokens, or vice versa. And then we're maybe approaching people who are still, they're one over one the other candidate, but they're still, like, you could change their mind, basically. But I think there would maybe need to be more that we were doing together. So whether, you know, we maybe got within a certain distance of each other, maybe a debate would take place between us, like a public debate, and maybe that would be a little game within a game. So
yeah, or maybe you could have like press hanging around as well that might slow you down, like a little, like a, you can't just like, you know, shove the camera in the face and push them over. So you might have to stop and speak to the press, and that'll slow you down. Another thing I was thinking, what's like the doomsday clock? What's the time frame? What's the, you know, how long does it last, and why does it last that long?
Yeah,
I'm asking lots of difficult questions, mate. Sorry.
Fine. No, I mean, I guess without having played it, it's hard to say. But let's say we played it for six turns, and you know, there's an odd number of villagers, so someone at that point would have to have gained enough support to win.
So, would the vote or whatever it be, would that be a foregone conclusion, or might there be like, because that'd be, I was thinking about maybe you convince him and you put a token on that villager, like, so if it's like red and blue, so I go and speak to him and I convince them that I can do something with taxes, so I get like a little blue token, right?
Yeah.
And then if I speak to him again and convince him on something else, security, I get another little blue token. And then maybe when that voter goes to cast the ballot, maybe there's some sort of dice roll that's affected by the little tokens that are put on. So even though I've convinced them on two issues and you've only convinced them on one, they might still vote for you, even though it's more likely to vote for me, but they might still vote for you. Does that kind of make sense? That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like at the end of a skirmish game, when you do like your warband progression, you know, you like you roll to see if they're injured, roll to see if they're dead, roll to see if you get any loot. Maybe that kind of like the end, you're building towards like the election, and each NPC goes into the ballot box, and then you roll the dice, whatever. Like, or maybe if I convince, you got to get a certain number, and if I've convinced them once, it's a D6, and if you've convinced them, you know, twice, it's a different dice number or whatever, you know, like a D8 or a D10 or something. I don't know, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, well...
That's good, man.
We'll maybe get on Tabletop Simulator at some point and have a run through.
Sounds good. Do you think it would be marketable? Do you think it would be scalable? Do you think enough people would be interested in this?
Nah, I don't know. And I think, again, another flaw in it is, like, that apart from those things about, like, the halflings stealing our jobs and that, this is actually, like, the only reason it's set in a medieval village is because that was the miniatures I was looking at. There's really no reason it needs to be in that setting. But as much as it's a fun concept, I don't know that people would be rushing to the shops to buy it. So
you never know. Don't do it. Don't do yourself a disservice. Okay.
Your game, mine, on the other hand, I'm expecting a very kickstartable, marketable, highly profitable product.
Tough gig to follow, mate. So my skirmish, non-violent skirmish game, is it still a skirmish if it's non-violent? My skirmish-sized non-violent game is called The Life and Concerts of Kenny Bolton. So, Kenny Bolton in the 80s was huge. He had an amazing beard, he had amazing hair, he had amazing leather pants, he had awesome shirts, half done up, hairy chest, right? You get the kind of idea. So 20 years has gone by, it's now 2000s, and Kenny Bolton is back on the scene. He needs some more money for his Malibu beach house, and he needs his jet setting lifestyle kind of maintained. So he's doing some comeback tours around the world. So the two opposing factions are Kenny Bolton and his security team against hordes of middle-aged men and women who are very enthusiastic about seeing Kenny Bolton again 20 years later and reliving their youth. So the concerts and life of, there's different scenarios. Some of them are concerts in various different places, different size of venues, different amounts of crowd. And there's also different life events. Kenny goes to the barbers. Kenny goes to the DMV, or the what would you call it in the UK, where you get your license renewed, car license renewed. So he goes about DVLA plays, yes. He goes to these various different places, both in his professional life and his personal life. And the aim of the game is for Kenny Bolton, on from his perspective, is to stay intact. He doesn't want people harassing him. He doesn't want people getting too close to him. He doesn't want people trying to steal his leather pants. He doesn't want anyone trying to tear his boxer shorts from him. And he definitely, definitely doesn't want people pulling his hair, potentially pulling a hair from his head to keep and put it on the wall and stroke it every morning. So him and his security team are trying to keep people away. But obviously the hordes of middle-aged men and women who are very enthusiastic about seeing Kenny Bolton, they are very keen on harassing him, getting close to him and getting some sort of keepsake because they never know when he's going to tour again. They don't know if it's this comeback gig. Is it his last one? Don't know. There's all sorts of rumors about his personal life and the things that he does in the background. Might have a heart attack. Might have an overdose. Don't know. Don't know. This is all rumor and conjecture. So, yeah, the aim of the game is for the fans to get close and to get a little souvenir for fans. And then for Kenny Bolton and his team is to keep people away. So it's a little bit like, do you remember playing What Time Is It, Mr. Wolf?
Yeah.
I remember playing that as a kid. So the mechanic of the non-violence is these are all upstanding members of society. So they're not going to be pushing, they're not going to be shoving, they're not going to be grabbing. The security team is obviously a lot smaller than the crowd. So the skirmish game is an elite warband against maybe more of a horde warband. But all of the security team and Kenny Bolton have got a viewing zone, like a 45 degree viewing zone. They're on a square base. So anything that's in that front arc, that's called the arresting gaze. Now, obviously, with a security guard, that is very literal, because if they see you're up to no good, they can arrest you and throw you out of the venue. But with Kenny Bolton, his arresting gaze is his magical blue eyes. And if he fixes you with a stare, you just pulled in like a tractor beam to how amazing his voice is and how beautiful his face is and his leather pants and maybe his Egyptian symbols that are on his gold necklaces that are dangling over his hairy chest. If any of the guards or Kenny Bolton fix you with their arresting gaze, you can't move. So the aim of the game for the fans is to swarm the stage, swarm Kenny Bolton, whilst avoiding the security guards and also Kenny Bolton's arresting gaze. So there you go. That's the general idea. Have you got any questions?
Yeah. So is this a player versus player game? Like, would you control Kenny and I control the swarm, or would we both be controlling the swarms?
No. It's very, one of us is Kenny Bolton, and one of us is the adoring crowd.
So it's basically Space Hulk with an 80s icon instead of the Space Marines and the Tyranids.
Yeah.
Are the...
Yeah. It's that theme. Yeah, that theme. I didn't make that association, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how do you envisage the Kenny Bolton miniature looking as well?
Well, you can see that I've cunningly woven two names into one. I didn't want to get done for any sort of liable... anything. So I'll say at this point, any associations with anyone that is real is coincidental, and I'll retract any statement that anyone finds offensive. It's a combination of Kenny Rogers. Kenny Rogers was a country singer, Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers. So very suave, very cool, and also Michael Bolton. So Kenny Bolton is an amalgamation of Michael Bolton and Kenny Rogers. So and a little bit of Bon Jovi in there too, you know. So it's all these kind of 80s pop singers, you know. So yeah, like I said, leather pants, you know, very long hair like a lion's mane, cool beard, hairy chest, open shirt, you know, with the Egyptian symbols and things like that, and maybe he can wear different jewelry, which might do different effects. I've been dabbling with different effects and different pluses and minuses and nerfs and buffs and things like that for certain things that he wears, because I thought maybe if you deck him out a little bit more stylishly, that would maybe give him some buffs, but then people might find him even more alluring. So they might, you know, they might get some buffs too, because he, you know, he's got a new gold ring on, or he's got a sovereign ring, or maybe he's got his teeth whitened. So, you know, something like that. But yeah. There you go. Any other questions?
So would this be a exclusively miniature game? Would there be like any cards involved? And what kind of dice are you talking? Like D6 or the more specialized polyhedral dice? Or
yeah. So I don't know if the dice rolls had only come in when you got close to Kenny Bolton, and that would be just a case of the only dice roll that I envisaged so far. Because believe it or not, this isn't fully fleshed out. I know from my amazing intro that it seems like it's, you know, ready to go to market, but believe it's not. But I only envisage a dice roll right now when the individual is accosting Kenny Bolton to roll to see what souvenir they managed to acquire in the seconds that they have before the security team throws them out. So it'll just be a case of, you know, rolling high equals good trinket. Rolling low means maybe, you know, you fumble and scratch at his belt buckle, but a prize away before you get anything. So yeah, that's all there is at the moment.
So who do you see the target market as here then?
No one is going to buy this game. There is no target market. No, it would be people that just may be enticed by the title and the introductionary kind of paragraph on the back of the box. It's a very much a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing that people might just read it and think that sounds kind of terrible, but that sounds kind of funny. That audience, those guys.
Yeah, well, we've got two games under our belt now. Would you like to hear about Tree Fellers Get Wood?
Definitely, yes.
Our question of the month for you in December is, tell us about your 2024 hobby highlights. Maybe you finally got that miniature you've wanted since 1991. Maybe you levelled up your painting or finally finished that army. Or perhaps it was something on the gaming front that stood out to you most. No matter what your 2024 hobby highlights were, we'd love to hear them. Head on over to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail to submit, and I need them in by Monday the 30th of December. That's bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. And now, back to the show. Alrighty then. I think the good thing about this game, maybe the only good thing about this game, is that, like, you probably have some miniatures in your collection that have axes, and they're obviously, you know, designed with violence in mind, but, you know, an executioner or some sort of skirmisher with an axe could just be a lumberjack in another life, I suppose. So the game is called Tree Fellers Get Wood, and it's tree fellers, but you control three fellas. You've got three lumberjacks each.
And let's see what you've done there, mate. That's nice.
So we set up the table. What we want to do, our table, the terrain here, unsurprisingly, is as many trees that you could get on the board. We've got all sorts of different trees, redwoods, oak trees, silver birch. And these trees have a difficulty rating for cutting down, which also equates to the value of the wood. So, you know, the harder a tree, I don't know if this correlates to actually cutting down trees, but that the harder the tree in this game to cut down, you know, the more price the wood's going to fetch at market. So they have a CD rating, a chop difficulty rating, and also a value points rating. So the oak tree has a chop difficulty rating of 5. So it's, you know, I need to roll a 5 or 6. But I'm getting 4 value points for the wood. So silver birch, easier to chop down. I could chop it down on a 3, but it's only worth 2. So you kind of see how this is going there. You know, we're taking our three fellas and we're navigating the board. We're trying to chop trees down. And again, to negate this, you know, as both playing a solo game on the same board, I was trying to think of ways that we can have sort of dynamics between us. So, you know, special abilities. I was thinking of the bicep flex or you know, the big impressive beard, maybe a special cedarwood scented beard oil, you know, things like that that could have an impact either on your fellow lumberjacks or to intimidate the rival lumberjacks. So I'll pause for questions at this point.
Okay. So, like, I could have a very... like an awesome lunch box. So it's apparent that my wife has made me an amazing lunch.
Yeah.
And I could that could distract other people and be like, oh, look at his lunch. And I like, they might miss a turn, or they might find it harder to cut down their tree because my amazing lunch box is intriguing to the other fellas. So something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, what one of them could even be like, you know, a really primal manly roar that you let out, and that might inspire your fellow lumberjacks to greater strengths, greater feats of strength. Or again, it might scare off the rival lumberjacks. They might just not want to get too close.
Well, maybe
to you.
Maybe you could roll. Maybe you could roll for that, because the intent is to be like a gruff manly roar, but it might not come out that way, and then you might be a laughing stock of the. Of the cops.
So you roll a one and it's like, do you let out this high-pitched squeal?
And you got egg on your face. You got egg on your lumberjack shirt. I like it. Do we pick what axe we bring? Because, you know, obviously cutting down trees with different CD rates. CD, that's my favorite bit, by the way. CD ratings, different axes maybe can help us chop down certain trees. Is there any sort of wear and tear on our axe and different things like that? Have we gone this far?
No, but it's a great point. You know, I'm thinking, you know, if you've got a guy and he's got this massive like axe, this two-handed axe the size of a person, you know, he's probably going to start the chop quite well, but he's going to tire quickly. Whereas you might get the guy with the wee tomahawk, like it takes ages, but he could maybe keep going for longer. I don't know. So. You could bring in axe type, axe sharpness, axe quality.
Shaft
there's all
length.
Sorts of shaft length would be a good one, yeah.
That sounds good, man. I like that. What happens when I've chopped the tree down then? Is that it? Is it just magically appear at the market, or is there any sort of collation of the wood?
Yeah, I certainly haven't got that far. But yeah, I was just thinking the tree would be removed. But yeah, there might be, a game within a game of like the tree's chopped down, but you know, maybe the other lumberjacks will be trying to get a piece
about,
of
like,
that.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, because, you know, you chop a tree down, but it needs to get from where you've chopped it down to market. And there might be some opportunity for some appropriation of the wood if you're not looking after it, or your team aren't securely moving it to your trailer or what it is, or whatever. How do you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And we've got a whole expansion pack you could buy, and it's the Dutch elm disease expansion pack. So
okay.
Yeah, that's a new scenario that they could play.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if there'd be any sort of wildlife, you know, opportunity in there. Like, you know, I just watched the Lorax movie the other day. You know, would the wildlife have anything to say? Like, for example, if you went to a tree, but it's got like a lovely nest of squirrels in there that are hibernating, you know, and you look in there and, you know, it breaks your heart to think that you might remove the squirrels from the home, and maybe you've made that whole effort to get to the tree, but you just can't bring yourself to chop it down. I don't know.
Yeah, there's all those sort of scenarios where, yeah, you maybe discover like a site of specific scientific interest. Maybe you have some local government officials come in, maybe the health and safety executive come in to do an inspection of the site. So yeah, you're not going to get it all your own ways in the woods.
That's exciting. So how are we moving? Like, Are we? Is it a certain inch movement? Is it square based, where you can move it a number of squares? Like, how different are the woodsmen or the fellas? How different are the fellas between each other?
Yeah, I mean, maybe going back to that, like axe size or type, you could have your more like wiry, you know, agile lumberjack who can cover a lot more ground, but maybe can't cut down trees quite as fast. Whereas you get your big burly guy who, you know, he'll knock a tree down in a couple of swipes, but it's going to take him a while to get there. He's probably the guy with the really impressive lunch, I would imagine.
Yeah, plowman's lunch. Yeah, man, I like that. That's good. There's two good ones. Out of your two, which one is your favourite?
I think I like tree fellers get wood better. I think it's got a bit more flavour to it. So that's the one I'll take to Kickstarter.
They're both good. They're both good, though. Both nice. Well, there you go, man. That's good. I always like those. It's always, I always like, I wouldn't say it's good, but I like expressing our creativity and using our brains.
Yeah, I still always remember your, what was it, the King's Touch or the Queen, the Royal Touch or something.
Royal Touch. The Royal Touch. That was a good brilliant one. I'd buy that.
Yeah.
Yeah, get off my lawn. That was another good one. Yeah, it's fun just coming up with
things. That's what it was, yeah. And then you had food hygiene safety inspector. It sounds so mundane, but I bet when you started playing it, you'd be like, this is brilliant. So
I would. I'd make that happen, yeah, for sure. That's good, man. That's really cool. Yeah, the non-violent thing kind of got me. And didn't want to do board. I wanted to make sure it was like kind of, you know, tabletop. It's always good. I'd be interested to hear what other people come up with, because other people come up with some real humdingers. Like, I know you've got a space to leave like a voice comment on your shows, right? I think that's on your website, is that right?
So if people got any ideas. Yeah, I'll have to run that as a...
Yeah, for sure.
As a wee pitch and...
I'm sure we can dig out some sort of certificate of excellence that we can send to someone if we find our favourite one. But yeah, I'd be interested to know, because people come up with some really good stuff, don't they? And it's usually the weirdest, strangest ideas that they're the best ones. That, like, how did that person ever come up with that?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Like, yeah, nice. Anything else? Is there anything else coming up for you over the next few weeks that you're excited about?
Not so much at this end. No, I'm just plodding away. I was just going to ask you, like, if you'd painted anything or got any games in recently or that.
Yeah. I've just finished painting all the Lannister faction from A Song of Ice and Fire. So I've finished painting all of them now. So I've painted at least one of every unit that they've released for the Lannister faction. So that's done now. But I haven't been basing them because I wanted to wait until the end, which in hindsight, it was a big mistake, because now I'm having to chomp through like 20 different movement trays and 20 times 12-ish minis that I've painted and base them uniformly. So yeah, the main thing I've been doing over the last few weeks is just that. So I got this Vallejo thick mud, kind of like diorama effect. If people are looking for good basing material, this Vallejo diorama effect is awesome, because the GW stuff that I used to use is good and stuff, but you get like a tiny little pot. It's like one of those, like, it's like 47 milliliter pots, I think it is, for a crazy amount of money. And it's good, don't get me wrong, that's really cool. But this Vallejo diorama effect is only a teeny bit more expensive, and you get like, I don't think this is an official weight, but you get a shit ton. And there's no way I'm using all of it. So yeah, and I've got a few of them. So I've got like, I got thick mud. I've also got industrial. No, sorry, it's not thick mud. It's industrial mud. And then I've got grey sand. And so I kind of mix those together. I've got some tufts. I've got some army painter tufts, I think it were, and some Vallejo tufts as well. So I'm just kind of working through that, you know, just kind of putting this base material on, washing it, dry brushing it, and then putting a variety of different tufts on to make all the base in uniform. So then hopefully I'll be able to do a big group picture of all the Lannisters, really. That'd be cool.
What about the playing front?
Yeah, playing same. Yeah, it's hard though. I'm going through a little bit of a tough time with it, because I've never been a min-max list builder or a spammer. I think I mentioned it there, but I'll reinforce it, is that I don't ever like having more than one unit. So I've got one unit of all the units in the Lannister faction. But the fella that I play with all due respect, he's a good guy and stuff like that, but he started to find the stuff that's good with his faction and kind of spamming it. So we're kind of hitting the buffers a little bit with stuff, where it's the last couple of games haven't been particularly fun, but I'm not having a go at him, because he's like figuring out what his faction is good at and saying, well, my faction does that well, let's do it a lot. So I think he had three units of the same guys last game, and they all had this like hidden traps rule, which means that if I activate one of my units within 12 inches of his, he like attacks them like with like hidden traps. So that's, I wouldn't say it's been difficult, but, and I wouldn't say it's made it bad, but it's just a different level of the game now, because he knows the game. He's starting to list build. He's starting to get to know his army and stuff like that. But I I don't do that. So I don't want to follow that direction, but I also want to keep it fun. So I don't, I honestly don't know what to say. I don't know what, I don't know if I should say anything. I don't think I will. But yeah, I don't know. I guess you don't really have that insight because you don't ever play games, but I'm sorry, mate. I keep it. That's only fourth time today, but yeah, that's just like a new layer to things, which has been not negative. It's definitely not positive, but it's not negative, but it's just like I don't really know how to, you know, it's just a little bit less fun for me, but he's having more fun because he's starting to figure out what his army does good and he's doing it a lot. But I don't know how to progress with it. I keep on playing games and it's still fun, don't get me wrong, but it's just been a little bit like, okay. So yeah, so still playing Stop the Song of Ice and Fire. No, it's not that. It's just, I don't know, like, but I have no right to say anything because we didn't agree to have only one of each unit in our list. Like, it's completely unreasonable for me to say anything because it's like, he's having a great time. But so it's my fault. I should do all the things that my faction does the best a lot, if that makes sense. But I've sort of found a few things that my faction does well, but then I'm like, I've used it for like a game or two, and I go, okay, I won't use that for a bit, I'll use something else. But then that's kind of bit me on the ass because it's just a bit like, oh, okay. So yeah, Song of Ice and Fire. In the new year, I'm hoping to do some sort of zombie game. Maybe Walking Dead All at War. Hopefully, Last Days. You heard of Last Days?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Last Days is Ash Barker. Is Ash Barker the guy from Guerrilla Miniature Games YouTube channel? Can't remember. He's got it's like a zombie survival type game, like Frostgrave, you know, survival game, where you have to like loot stuff, and you know, there's another faction on the table at the same time, but you don't necessarily have to get them, and there's zombies kicking around as well. So I got ages ago I got one of those Mantic terrain crates, if you remember those, and one of the crates was like post-apocalyptic games. So I've got like a whole bunch of plastic terrain, tents, little campground, little industrial zone, some like crashed wrecked cars and stuff like that. So I really want to paint that terrain. I've painted like half of it, but I really want to paint the rest. So I might start that in the new year. I'll try to start that in the new year. And then also there's a skirmish sized, A Song of Ice and Fire game coming out. It was on crowdfunding ages ago. It's called A Song of Ice and Fire Tactics. So that's got like little war bands of 12. So I've got Lannisters and Starks for A Song of Ice and Fire, but I've always wanted to get other factions, but I don't want to get them because I don't have the space, and who needs more than two factions? I only have two factions to play demo games. So, I've not been able to get other factions, even though I wanted to kind of try them and just play with them and just paint them. So there's like these little war bands for all of the factions, but there's only like 12 guys for factions. So that should come in February. So I'm quite looking forward to that.
Lovely stuff. You keep busy anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've been painting loads, mate. I don't know, like I think I might have probably mentioned it last time. I don't know what's bitten me, but I've just been painting loads. Like just huge, like batch painting, not like amazing standard painting. I can't remember what I called them on our Discord. I'll have to check it out. But like just not really thinking about it all. Just literally just painting and just enjoying them. Just literally turning my brain off and just seeing what comes out. And I've just been really enjoying that whole batch painting process. Yeah, it's been really, really cool.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.